Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Round 2 edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On January 17, 2018, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Encino Motorcars v. Navarro, a case on its second trip to the High Court regarding a dispute over the application of the Fair Labor Standards Act's overtime pay requirements for service advisors at car dealerships. Congress enacted the Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA, in 1938 to protect all covered workers from substandard wages and oppressive working hours. And it requires overtime pay for employees covered under the Act who work more than 40 hours in a given week. The FLSA exempts from this requirement, however, any salesman, partsman, or mechanic primarily engaged in selling or servicing automobiles, trucks, or farm implements, if he is employed by a non-manufacturing establishment primarily engaged in the business of selling such vehicles or implements to ultimate purchasers. Hector Navarro and other service advisors filed suit against their employer, Encino Motorcars, alleging that it violated the FLSA by failing to pay them overtime wages. Encino countered that as service advisors, Navarro and the other plaintiffs fell within the FLSA exemption. The district court ruled in favor of Encino, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit reversed, relying upon a 2011 regulation issued by the Department of Labor and indicating that service advisors were not covered by the exemption. The Supreme Court, however, thereafter vacated the judgment of the Ninth Circuit, determining that the regulation at issue was procedurally defective. The court remanded the case for the Ninth Circuit to construe the FLSA exemption without placing controlling weight on the Department of Labor regulation. On remand, the Ninth Circuit, assuming without deciding that the Department of Labor regulation was entitled to no weight, held that the FLSA exemption, on its own terms, did not encompass service advisors. As a result, the court indicated, plaintiffs could proceed against Encino on their claims for overtime. Encino petitioned for certiorari, however, and the Supreme Court agreed to take up the case a second time to consider again whether service advisors at car dealerships are exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act's overtime pay requirements. And now, to discuss the case, we have Tammy McCutcheon, principal at Littler Mendelson.
The question presented in the Encino Motorcars case is whether service advisors at car dealerships are exempt from the overtime pay requirements of the Fair Labor Standards Act under 29 U.S.C. 213b10a. This exemption is for any salesman, partsman, or mechanic primarily engaged in selling or servicing cars or trucks. Service advisors are employees who sell repair and maintenance services to customers at car dealerships. Now, since the exemption covers only car dealerships, you may be tempted to say or even thinking, OMG, who cares? There is nothing here that could be of interest, certainly not worth my time to listen to a podcast. But you would be wrong. The case presents important issues of statutory interpretation, deference to administrative agencies, and retroactivity when an administrative agency changes its mind on an issue. Before I talk about those interesting issues, I do need to start with a brief history of the case, which is making its second appearance before the Supreme Court this term. I also want to discuss the Department of Labor's flip-flops on the issue, so hang in there with me. Let's start with DOL flip-flops. DOL has gone back and forth and back and forth again on whether service advisors are exempt. This exemption was added to the FLSA by Congress in 1966, and DOL's first interpretive bulletin on the exemption was published in 1970. That first interpretive bulletin interpreted the exemption to be limited to employees primarily engaged in the selling of cars only, excluding employees who sold repair and maintenance services such as service advisors at issue here. By the way, these FLSA interpretive bulletins do not go through the Administrative Procedures Act notice and comment rulemaking, so they're due our deference rather than Chevron deference. The 1970 interpretive bulletin was rejected by the Fifth Circuit in 1973, and the Sixth Circuit in 1976. Because of these decisions in 1978, DOL issued an opinion letter stating that service advisors were exempt and walking away from that 1970 interpretive bulletin. DOL confirmed the 1978 interpretation in 1987 by amending its field operations handbook. The FOH is the primary resource that DOL investigators use when they're out at employers. So from 1978 until 2011, for over 30 years, it's exactly 33 years, DOL treated service advisors as exempt. Then, in 2011, to the surprise of most, DOL issued actual regulations under the Administrative Procedure Act notice and comment rulemaking to bring back that 1970 interpretation that had been rejected by the Fifth and Sixth Circuits and stated that the exemption applies only to employees who sell vehicles, not to those who sell services. So let me pause here and note why these regulations came as a surprise. That's because they came from a proposal to change the regulations published in 2008 under the Bush administration, and the intent that was published in the proposal was to adopt the 1978 opinion letter as a regulation. But when the Obama administration took over and issued the final rule in 2011, they flipped back to the 1970 invalidated interpretation. This is a lesson, by the way, to all political appointees. Do not begin a regulatory effort that you cannot finish. In any case, dealerships following DOL's 1978 interpretation have been classifying service advisors as exempt for over 30 years. Thus, not surprisingly, the 2011 regulations led to litigation, which has led us twice to the Supreme Court. Let's talk about Encino 1, decided in 2016, the Supreme Court's October 2015 term. In the case below, the Ninth Circuit deferred to DOL's 2011 regulations and found that service advisors were non-exempt. The Ninth Circuit also found the statutory language was ambiguous because, well, we all know that the word or in a statute could actually mean and. Well, DOL defended its 2011 regulations in the Supreme Court through amicus, but unsuccessfully. The Supreme Court reversed and remanded in a 7-2 decision written by Justice Kennedy, finding that the 2011 regulations to be arbitrary and capricious and not worthy of Chevron deference. That is because DOL had failed to adequately explain the sudden change to its 30-plus year policy, especially in light of the significant reliance interests involved, e.g., every service advisor in the country had been classified as exempt. In its remand, the Supreme Court directed the Ninth Circuit that the exemption must be construed without placing controlling weight on the department's 2011 regulation. Now, although this was technically a 7-2 decision, it really wasn't. The justices were 9-0, not refusing to give the DOL's 2011 regulations Chevron deference. The two dissenters, Justice Thomas and Justice Alito, would not have remanded, but would have ruled straight up that the service advisors are exempt. As Justice Thomas stated in Encino 1, they disagreed with the majority's decision to punt on the issue before it. Well, I guess he's saying, I told you so, because now we're back in the Supreme Court again. On remand, the Ninth Circuit again held that the service advisors are non-exempt, relying on statutory interpretation and legislative history. So here we are back again at the Supreme Court with the same question presented, but this time the court will need to reach the merits of the exemption and what it means more squarely. I guess we already know how Justice Thomas and Justice Alito are going to vote in Encino 2. Before we get to the oral arguments that occurred last week, one more possible flip-flop occurred by DOL. DOL did not file amicus in Encino 2. That's something that's very unusual for the Solicitor General not to participate in an FLSA case. Instead, just 12 days before oral argument, DOL published a field assistance bulletin announcing that they will not enforce the position that service advisors are non-exempt, pending the Supreme Court's decision. So there's going to be no enforcement on this issue by DOL before the Supreme Court rules. Of course, this does not stop private litigation, and although we may assume that this Field Assistance Bulletin signals that DOL is ready to once again adopt a policy that service advisors are exempt. That is not exactly or entirely clear. Now, most of the oral argument in Encino 2 focused on interpretation of the statute. Disjunctive versus conjunctive, does or mean or? Did Congress intend to exempt employees who sell services? And the questions from the usual suspects indicate that they are likely to vote for affirming the Ninth Circuit and hold that service advisors are not exempt under the statute. Now, I'm not going to go today into the details on this debate. You can read the transcript on SCOTUS blog about what the words in the FLSA are or actually mean or were intended to mean, beyond saying that I think it will be a 5-4 decision. What I do want to do is focus instead on three issues of more general applicability and I think of interest to many. First, the future of deference to agencies. In Encino 1, all nine justices refused Chevron deference to DOL's 2011 regulations. So those regulations are gone. But DOL's 1978 opinion letter and 1986 field operations handbook amendments are still out there, as is the new field bulletin. The Ninth Circuit did not discuss this guidance or the reliance interests that they create. The only significant question during oral argument came from Justice Kagan, who noted that the Solicitor General was not participating in the case and asked counsel for the employee respondents whether he was aware of any current activity taking place over at DOL. He was apparently not aware of the field bulletin, but Paul Clement, representing the employers, made the court aware of that bulletin in his rebuttal. Bottom line, there is an opportunity here for the court to address our deference and determine how much it's going to rely on these older opinion letters and interpretations of DOL. Second is retroactivity. All of the justices in Encino 1 expressed concerns with the reliance interests created by DOL's 30-plus year policy. This is still a concern, I think. In fact, the final questions in oral arguments were about the reliance interests. If the court affirms that the Ninth Circuit, that service advisors are not exempt because the court's decisions are applied retroactively, that could mean that every dealership in the country would owe 2 years of back wages to every service advisor in the country. Quite a windfall. Justice Kennedy, Alito, Thomas, and even Ginsburg have all expressed concerns either in Christopher or in Encino 1 or during the oral arguments in this case about the retroactivity and reliance interests. In this case, in fact, Justice Ginsburg asked questions of the Respondent Employees Council regarding the FLSA good faith defense and whether that would protect an employer from retroactive application of their ruling. I don't think she got a clear answer. I'm going to try to provide it now. Under the FLSA, there is a complete good faith defense against all monetary liability if an employer can plead and prove that they acted in reliance on DOL guidance. A court then can order an employer to reclassify employees from exempt to non-exempt, but cannot order back wages if this good faith defense is established. Currently, though, to assert the good faith defense, each individual employer must prove that it was aware of and followed the DOL's guidance. It wasn't raised in this case, and I suspect problems of proof is why, in this case and many other cases. I mean, how many employers here, how many dealerships, could today put their hands on a memo from back in 1978 when DOL first issued its guidance that these employees were exempt and that they made their decision, prove that they made their decision to treat the service advisors as exempt based on that 1978 guidance? Also, the good faith defense is unique to the FLSA. You cannot find it in Title VII, in the National Labor Relations Act, or any other federal employment law. With agencies flip-flopping so frequently now, retroactivity is an issue that I would like to see the court address in its opinion. Third, and one of the most interesting issues in the case to me, is whether the Supreme Court is ready to specifically address the issue of whether exemptions to the FLSA must be construed narrowly against the employer seeking to assert them. Now, this is a canon that seems to begin nearly every court decision addressing FLSA exemption issues, and on which the Ninth Circuit relied below in this case. In the last two FLSA cases before the Supreme Court, Sandifer versus U.S. Steel regarding a CBA exemption for paying for donning and doffing time in a union environment, and Christopher versus SmithKline regarding whether pharmaceutical sales reps were exempt as outside sales employees, there have been some hints from some justices that they are ready to abandon this canon entirely. In his dissent in Encino 1, Justice Thomas called this a made-up canon and warned the Ninth Circuit not to rely on the canon again. They obviously ignored him. He also characterized Sandifer and Christopher as the court declining to apply the canon. Now, whether a majority of the court has gone that far is, I think, a matter of debate in my world. Paul Clement, arguing for the employer petitioner, straight out asked the court to put the canon to rest. Yes, he said, exceptions should not swallow the rule. But Congress has passed over 50 different full or partial exemptions from the FLSA requirements for the express purpose of having some employees not be covered by the FLSA. Why should we interpret Congress's intent to cover some employees under the FLSA differently from Congress's intent to exclude other employees from coverage? Now, if the majority of the court accepts Clement's invitation to abandon this canon, that will change the entire landscape of litigation regarding FLSA exemptions. Well, that's all I have today. Encino 2 is a case worth watching, even if you're not an employment lawyer, as it may have implications far beyond the specific exemption at issue here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's FEDSOC.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.